down on a line of inquisitors at the end of the stone path. They are swept into the water. Another enormous wing sweeps right over our heads, flinging away the inquisitors closest to us. The other Balira has a rider on board, Gemma. I look on as her creature turns, allowing her to reach down and clasp Raffaele's arm. She pulls him to safety on board the Balira's back. Our turn. Violetta reaches out with her energy at the same time I reach out with mine. She pulls Terran's powers away from him. Out on the platform, Terran's eyes bulge. He stumbles backward a step, then crouches down on one knee as if someone had struck a violent blow. Violetta sucks her breath in sharply. She won't be able to hold his powers back for long. I drop our invisibility. For the first time, we are exposed in the arena. I focus all my concentration and reach out for Enzo's energy. In a flash, he transforms from himself into an exact copy of Terran. The arena bursts into a scene of chaos. All across the stands, patrons and their fighters leap into combat, attacking Inquisitors wherever they stand, sending the people into a panic. Some of the Inquisitors still on the stone pathway in the arena's center look poised to join the duel between Terran and Enzo, but with the two now identical, they can't seem to tell which one is which. Enzo doesn't wait. He leaps forward, dagger raised. Terran manages to hold up his sword just in time to meet Enzo's blade, but in his sudden weakness, he can't deflect it. The two tumble backward onto the ground. Terran shrieks as Enzo's blade finally makes contact, white hot and sharp, slicing deep into Terran's shoulder and burning his flesh. Enzo's second blade seeks out his heart. In a rage, Terran slashes out at Enzo. Even now, he still manages to force the prince to dance away. He staggers to his feet. It takes me a moment to realize that he's laughing. He notices Violetta and me crouched at the edge of the platform. He scowls. "About time you made your move," he shouts through the chaos. The words have scarcely left his mouth when I notice that Inquisitors, hundreds, thousands of them, are flooding into the arena. We were ready for him, but he was ready for us too. The people around us leap to their feet, screaming, and scramble for the nearest exit, but Inquisitors fence everyone in. It will be a bloodbath in here whether or not we win. I narrow my eye. The darkness building in me is overwhelming now, feeding on an entire arena's worth of terror and fury. I reach out, take hold of that energy, find Terran, and pull. He freezes in mid-attack, then falls to his knees. He shrieks in pain as I conjure the most agonizing illusion I can muster. Enzo engulfs him in flames, then lunges forward, aiming at his eyes. This is it. My heart leaps in anticipation. He's going to kill Terran. Something cold pushes violently back against my energy. I gasp. Terran's fighting me. My illusion on him wavers, then breaks. Violetta puts a hand on her forehead and stumbles backward. I can't hold on, she says hoarsely to me, before collapsing to her knees. Out in the arena, Terran sucks in a deep breath of relief as his burned skin starts to heal over. He starts fighting back. The window to fatally injure him is closing. I look at my sister. Her eyes roll back, and exhausted, she faints on the path. My concentration flickers. Violetta! I shout, grabbing her arm. Then I glance to where Enzo is fighting Terran. My illusion over Enzo has vanished too, and his dark-robed figure contrasts starkly against Terran's white uniform. Leave her! When I look up, I see Mikkel standing over us, his eyes wild. He has joined us on the platform. He hoists Violetta up against him. We've broken through one of the entrances. I'll get her out. Go! I hesitate for a split second before nodding. Then Mikkel spirits her away, and I turn back to the arena. Never in my life have I seen so many Inquisitors. Their figures swarm the stands, clashing with Enzo's fighters. In the chaos, I climb over the short wall separating the seats from the arena's center, land on the stone path dividing the water, veil myself in invisibility, and rush toward where Enzo and Terran are fighting. My concentration snaps back into place, fueled by the panic, and Enzo again turns into a mirror image of Terran. But I'm getting tired, too. My powers are starting to slip out of my control. I stop a short distance from them, then I press my hands together, reach out, and weave a circle of energy threads around Taren. I conjure a dozen versions of himself, identical in every way, each of them lunging at Taren with daggers drawn. The illusion is brief, but it works. Taren hesitates for a moment, suddenly unsure of where to look. His enemy is everywhere all at once. Enzo, the real Enzo, grabs Taren around his neck. He tries to stab at his eyes, but Taren manages to twist his face away at the last second. Enzo's blade slices across his neck, leaving a deep gash. Immediately, it starts to heal. Taren lets out a gurgling growl and slams his head backward, forcing Enzo off him, then staggers forward and spits blood from his mouth. I can't hold the dozen illusions anymore. The figures disappear, once again leaving Enzo alone with Taren. Taren is breathing heavily. Even he has his limits. His eyes lock onto me again. I realize that I'm too tired to hold my own invisibility illusion. "There you are," he says, his voice low and raspy. His chiseled face turned into a frightening snarl. His attention flickers away from Enzo as he dashes for me. "Little illusion worker." Then it happens. Taren lunges for me. His sword slashes me deep across my chest, slicing through my robes and into my skin. Pain hits me everywhere. I fall. My head hits the ground hard enough to send the world spinning. Suddenly everything slows. I lift my hand and see it stained with my own blood. I try to reach for my energy, but everything moves too slowly, and my thoughts form in disjointed pieces. Broken illusions flash around me. My power is gone unsteady and uncontrolled. Through it, Enzo rushes forward to step between the two of us. I have hit my head. Taren rushes at me with his sword. All I see are his pale, furious eyes. A nightmare. I strike blindly out with my illusions. Taren's there, blurred before me. I try to scream at him, but I cannot form the thought. My powers spark wildly out of control. Taren's face changes into Dante's, then back again. A memory clicks into place. I suddenly see before me a million glittering threads. I killed him in that dark alley, on the night the king died. I killed with an illusion of extreme pain. I reach down into my chest, find the last of my strength, and pull on Taren's energy. Let him feel agony like he's never known. Let him suffer. I put everything I have into this, letting my hatred of him go unchecked. Taren lets out a wrenching cry of pain. He falls to his knees. Wait, this isn't right. I blink, confused, trying to clear my hazy thoughts. My illusions continue to work on him, wild and uncontrolled and untethered, blind. Blind! Then I realize, why am I able to affect Taren? He cannot be injured. And Violetta isn't here to stop him. And that's when I realize, in horror, that I have attacked Enzo instead. Enzo was the one who had blurred toward me. He had moved toward me in an attempt to protect me. Enzo is the one that I sent staggering to his knees. I yank my powers back instantly, but it is too late. Taren, the real Taren, seizes the moment. He takes his sword. He plunges it deep into Enzo's chest. It runs all the way through, the bloody point emerging from Enzo's back right between his shoulder blades. No! Enzo lets out a terrible gasp. Taren's mouth tightens in triumph. He clutches Enzo's robes in one fist, then yanks him closer, shoving the sword in deeper. I cannot move. I cannot think. I can't even scream. My shaking hand reaches out for him, but I am too weak to do anything else. All my powers, undone in the one moment when they would have mattered the most. I struggle to regain control, but it makes no difference now. Enzo trembles on the blade. Taren pulls him close and bends toward his ear. Somehow, in the midst of the arena's chaos, the lead Inquisitor's words sound clear. "I win," he says. For a moment, their eyes lock. Taren's pale, pulsing, mad. Enzo's dark, scarlet, dying. Then he pulls his blade out. Enzo collapses to the ground. I run to his fallen figure as if this might just be an illusion, but he stays still and unmoving. Somewhere Taren's voice reaches me. "Thank you for your help," he says. I put my hands on Enzo's face. His name falls from my lips, hoarse with pain. I had lashed out at him with all my fury, but was it rage meant for Taryn, or was it really my internalized anger at Enzo for using me, for leading me on? Maybe there's still a chance. He fights with the last of his strength to return my gaze. What do I see there? Is it betrayal? I'm sobbing now. Tears fill my vision and spill down my cheek. There is nothing to be done. Enzo looks at me. He blinks rapidly as he tries to say something, but blood froths at the edges of his mouth. He coughs. Red speckles land on my arm. I look on in disbelief as his eyes meet mine one last time. Then his life fades away. Just like that. My mind goes blank. The world turns silent. The sky above us flickers, then turns a furious shade of scarlet. A vision of blood, deep and dark. I crouch, my hands ripping at the ground, my emotions unwinding, my energy surging to a level I've never felt before. My gaze fixes on Taryn. I hurl myself helplessly against his invincible power, trying desperately to grasp onto him in some way, to hurt him. Hurt him. Hurt him. But I can't. I'm useless. He could slay me right now if he wanted to, but he no longer wears his eerie smile or his cold amusement. He looks serious, grave, and thoughtful. You don't belong with them, Adelina Amuteru, he says. You belong with me. Somehow, somewhere, a curtain of wind lifts me up into the air. I struggle against it, wanting to stay in the arena. I want to destroy Taryn. But I feel Lucin's arms wrap around me, then her pulling me up onto the back of a Balira. Below us lies the wreckage of the arena, the dead and dying, the smoke and carnage, the white cloaks littered in clusters, the bodies of the dead who had fought for Enzo. None of that matters now. The prince is dead.
Taryn Santoro. Taryn looks up at the fleeing elites as they spirit away the prince's body. Behind them are inquisitors on the backs of Baliras, chasing them down. Taryn watches a moment longer, picturing Enzo's dead face as they go. The young prince's face was gray and lifeless, eyes shuttered, heart still. Blood stains the ground of the arena's platform. Taryn stays quiet. He does not smile. Enzo, whom he remembered from childhood, the boy who always defended him in front of his father. What a shame that he was the Reaper, all along. It had to be done. Dirty Malfetto. Now the world is a better place, and Giulietta can rule. Taryn's face remains a portrait carved from stone, but deep in his chest, he feels a twinge of loss. What a shame.
Trust is when we plummet into the depths of an abyss and reach out for each other's hands. Amadarin Poetry, various authors. Adelina Amuteru. I fade in and out of a strange, disturbed sleep filled with ghosts or illusions. I can't tell the difference anymore. Maybe there is none. Sometimes I see my father hovering over me, his face distorted and smiling. Other times, Violetta's tear-streaked face appears, and Enzo. Enzo. He hovers there, a little too far away, and I cry out for him, struggling against invisible bonds to reach him. He's alive. He's right there. Shouts come from somewhere in the distance. Hold her down! I'm in too much of a daze to dwell on anything other than the enormous creature carrying us across the sky and the silence and stillness of those riding with me. I want to open my mouth and say something, anything, but my state of half-consciousness muzzles me. I run a hand along my chest and feel a thick bandage there, trying gamely to lessen my blood loss. My vision blurs as I try to look around at the others, but I can't focus enough to see who they are. I look back up into the evening sky and close my eye. The world has faded to gray with Enzo's passing. The only feeling I'm aware of is Violeta's hand in mine, squeezing, and I squeeze back with what little strength I have. A few strands of my hair crisscross over my vision. They are dark gray, the darkest they've ever been. I have a vague recollection of us leaving the Balearas back and of my changing surroundings. Evening light slants through tree canopies and fireflies dance in the darkness. Occasionally I glimpse a rolling hill, a gentle valley full of deepening green, the gates of an estate. The outskirts of Estensia? A wave of nausea hits me and I close my eye again. Sleep threatens to pull me under. The next time I come to, I'm lying in the chambers of a twilit bedchamber, the air blue and waning, turning into night. For an instant, I think I've gone back in time. I've returned to the moment when the daggers first saved me and took me to the Fortunata court. It even looks like the same chamber. If I wait long enough, I'll see the maid come in and smile at me, and Enzo will follow in her wake, his dark eyes pensive and wary, lit with slashes of scarlet. He will lean forward and ask me if I want to hurt those who have wronged me. Slowly the chamber shifts until it looks like an unfamiliar room. My illusions are happening spontaneously again. It takes me a long moment to realize that this is not the Fortunata court, but some strange estate I've never been in, and that I'm not alone at all, but surrounded by the daggers. I groan, then turn to look at the person sitting closest to me. The instant I move, everyone backs cautiously away. Blades appear in their hands. I freeze. Their gesture sends a brief course of excitement through me, their fear stimulating my energy. Then the feeling vanishes, replaced with a sharp pain. My former friends. They're afraid of me. The person sitting closest to me is Raffaele. He's the only one who doesn't jump away. His bruises and injuries are still prominent, his cheekbone blue and purple, his lip marred by a thin cut. Scars circle his neck. When Gemma approaches to pull him away from me, though, he holds up a hand and wordlessly stops her. She backs away. I look at them all silently. "Where's my sister?" I finally whisper. My first words. "Resting." Raffaele nods once at me when he sees my alarmed expression. She's well. The divide between me and the other daggers is thick in the air. I realize through the fog in my head that they still aren't sure what role I played in Enzo's death. The words make me wince. My energy stirs, and Raffaele tightens his jaw. "You killed Dante, didn't you?" Lucent says. Her voice holds none of the wry amusement that I remember. None of the reluctant friendship and trust that I'd started to earn from her. Now there's nothing but anger, held back only in deference to Raffaele. I've lost her completely. "How do you do it?" I open my mouth, but no sound comes out. I had indeed killed Dante. I did it by twisting his pain illusions so severely that his heart bled. My silence is all that Lucent needs. Her lips tighten, and a veil of fear and unease blankets the room. "It was an accident," I choke out, the only thing I seem able to say, apparently. "Were you working with Taryn?" Lucent snaps. "Is that where you disappeared to when you ran away? Did you go off to see the Inquisition? Did you make some sort of pact with them?" Her voice rises. "He thanked you over Enzo's body, you—" "No, I can explain." The thought makes the anger rise in me, and my illusions threaten to veer out of control again. I clamp down on them in time. But the gesture makes Raffaele turn concerned eyes on me. Gemma studies me while chewing her lip. Fear comes off her too. My heart twists. "I would never, it was an accident, I swear to the gods." "Well, Raffaele," Mikhail says, cutting through the silence that follows. "What do we do with her now?" The way Mikhail addresses Raffaele and the way Gemma obeyed Raffaele's simple hand gesture tell me that the daggers have anointed a new leader. Raffaele shakes his head at me once. His eyes are heavy with sadness. You said you could explain, he says. So tell us what happened. I start to tell Raffaele about how I'd cloaked Enzo in invisibility, but he stops me with a subtle hand. No, he says. His voice turns firm. Tell us what happened from the beginning. My lips tremble. The truth. I hesitate as always, but then I crumble. In a stammering voice, I finally do. I tell Raffaele about the evening at the Fortunata Court when I first saw him perform. I tell him how Taryn came to me in the audience and threatened me with my sister's life. I tell him how I took advantage of the qualifying races to go to Taryn and tell him about the Tournament of Storms. I tell him how Taryn found me again during the Spring Moons and how I overheard Enzo and Dante's conversation about me. How I fled to the Inquisition Tower to free my sister. How I killed Dante in a dark alley. The release of all my lies and secrets is a relief, exhausting me. I tell them how Taryn lunged for me in the arena, how he threw up my hands in defense and conjured an illusion of indescribable pain on him, how I realized I was not attacking Taryn at all but Enzo. My voice falters here. The retelling leaves my heart so pained I can barely breathe, and in my sorrow, I see a ghost of Enzo flickering in and out of the room, his dark eyes turned toward me, his expression haunting. I can feel the suspicion emanating from everyone, their unspoken thought that I'm responsible for what had happened, that I am a monster. I am so sorry, so very sorry. Perhaps Taryn had always known that I would do something like this. When I finish, they are quiet. Lucent stares at me with an expression both disgusted and frightened. Gemma has retreated behind her, and Mikhail looks ready to stop me in case I try to hurt them here. I know what they're thinking, even though they don't say it out loud. They want me dead. It would make them all feel much better. A thick, dark anger begins to build inside me. I claw for it. More fog lifts from my mind. I feel sparks of strength growing in me, pushing past the weakness of my blood loss and grief. Finally, Raffaele speaks. There is a certain reverence the group gives him. With his words, the others quiet immediately, turning to him as if hoping he has the power to set everything right again. His voice is weak but steady. When I first tested you, he begins, taking one of my hands. You aligned with fear and fury, passion and curiosity. Do you remember? He is using his energy on me. I can feel his soothing pull on my heartstrings, the gentle tug that warms me to him, calming me. I find myself leaning into his touch, squeezing his hand harder. That afternoon when we'd first met doesn't seem like so long ago. I remember, I reply. Raffaele goes on. A certain sadness enters his voice. Your reaction to the Nightstone and Amber, to darkness, frightened me. It frightened me very much. Still, I wanted to believe that somehow you would be able to tame it to your will. Do you know how powerful you could be if you mastered these two emotions and learned how to use them both in yourself and in others? I believed. I thought, he hesitates for a moment. I thought your alignment to passion would save you. Passion's energy is bright and warm, just like the color of its gemstone. It is a light in the darkness, a fire in the night. I thought at first it would make you safer, that if you were around those whom you loved, you would be able to use your darkness to your advantage. I thought it would help tame you, and subsequently, that it would help you. Tears prickle the corner of my eye. I know what path Raffaele's words are going down. Raffaele lowers his jewel-toned eyes. I was wrong. Passion is bright and warm, but passion has a dark side too. It links with fear. Our hearts fill with terror at the thought of harm coming to our loved ones, don't they? You cannot have love without fear. The two coexist. In you, your alignment with passion instead fed your fear and fury. It made you darker. The more you love someone, the more unsteady your powers become. Your growing passion for Enzo made you volatile. It led to you losing control over your powers, powers that had grown to dangerous strengths. That, coupled with your anger and bitterness, has made you incredibly unpredictable. What are you saying? I whisper through my tears. Raffaele continues to pull on my energy, and his gentle touch sends waves of sadness washing over me. He feels guilty, I realize. Adelina, he murmurs. Oh, I gasp in sudden pain. I'm surprised that this is what finally breaks my heart. He has never, ever just called me Adelina before, not even when we first met. He is breaking his affectionate ties with me. I advised Enzo from the very beginning to kill you. He refused. I began to cry. A memory comes to me of my afternoon with Raffaele, when we sat together along the golden waters of Estenzia's canals and watched the gondolas go by, when he sang my mother's lullaby. Dante was right. Raffaele, kind, beautiful, sensual Raffaele, whom I cared about with all my heart, the only person in the world I thought I could trust entirely, the person I returned to the daggers to help save, had never trusted me in return. Kindness with strings attached. He was the last thread suspending me in the light. Without him, I can feel myself spiraling downward, falling to a place where I can no longer pull myself back up. Even you, I whisper through my tears. How could you? I don't need to ask to know that Raffaele must have also suggested that Enzo kill the boy who couldn't control the reins. In some way, Raffaele had always been the dagger's leader. Were we ever friends? I say in a small voice. Did you ever care about me? Raffaele winces. I can tell it pains him to tell me the truth, that even as he yearns to give me some comfort, he holds back and hardens his heart. I stand by my advice to him. I trained you solely because I didn't want you to embrace your full powers. I knew early on that it could bring all of us suffering, including you. Who will ever want you, Adelina? Did you honestly think you could escape who you are? You will never fit in anywhere. My father's ghost materializes beside me, his breath heavy and cold against my skin, his familiar voice hissing in my ear. No one else reacts to his presence, though. He is an illusion that tortures only me. We can fix it, I say. My hand clenches harder around Raffaele's. One last frantic attempt. You told me once that there were rumors of an elite who could bring the dead back to life, right? Raffaele shakes his head. You're deluding yourself, Adelina. He says gently, and I know that he isn't talking about the impossibility of bringing Enzo back. He's talking about Enzo's love for me. He cared. He risked his life for me. In desperation, I reach out with my energy and conjure an illusion of emotions around Raffaele, trying to convince him that Enzo loved me, if even briefly, if even in a moment of weakness, trying to convince him that he cares for me. My words come faster. I'll learn how to rein in my powers. I promise I can do it next time. Just give me one more chance. Raffaele closes his eyes. I feel him resisting the illusion being woven around him. Don't, he whispers. Please, I whisper back in a breaking voice. You've always been kind to me. Don't leave me behind, I beg you. I will be lost without you. What will I do? How will I learn? When Raffaele opens his eyes again, they look glossy with unshed tears. He reaches out to smooth hair away from the ruined side of my face. You have goodness in your heart, he says, but your darkness overwhelms it all. Your desire to hurt, destroy, and avenge is more powerful than your desire to love, help, and light the way. I have reached the limits of my knowledge. I don't know how to train you. Beauty and pain go hand in hand, my father always said. For an instant, I fantasize about making Raffaele feel the pain that he's giving to me, forcing him to cower before me in agony. How satisfying that would be. My energy swells in anticipation. Then I recoil in horror at the spark of joy I felt at such a depraved act. He's right about me. He's always been right. Raffaele tightens his lips. Tears no longer shine in his eyes. Maybe I imagined them all along. You can stay the night here, he says. But in the morning, you and your sister need to leave. It is my job to protect the daggers, and I no longer feel that we can be safe with you among us. I'm sorry. He's casting me out. I'm no longer one of them. Darkness swirls within me, washing at the shores of my consciousness. I see all the times I trained with Enzo, how he saved my life and took me in, how we kissed, the glow of his silhouette in the darkness, the way his hair would fall loose and unruly over his shoulders, his gentle expression. Then I see the stormy night, when my father made a deal to sell me. The first time I called on my illusions in the middle of pouring rain. The real reason why Enzo chose to save me on my execution day. All the times I was hurt and abused, left behind and abandoned. The iron stake and the fire and the people chanting below, wishing me dead and gone. Taryn's pale eyes staring back at me. The daggers, my training, Dante's sneering face, Raffaele's betrayal. The ambition churning in me reaches its peak, displacing my sorrow, fusing with my anger and hate and fear, my passion and curiosity. The whispers that lurk in the back of my mind now claw their way out into the open, their fingers long and bony, gleeful for the freedom I'm giving them. Are the daggers any different from your father, who wanted to sell you to settle his debts? They hiss at me. From Taryn, who wanted to use you to get to the daggers? Even the training cavern, hidden underground, was not a far stretch from the Inquisition's dungeons. Perhaps I'd simply switched one dark prison cell for another. No one ever gives me their kindness without hoping for something in exchange. Are they any different? Are they all the same? They all want to use you. Use you. Use you until they get what they want, and then they will toss you aside. Everything Raffaele saw in me on my testing day is true. Together, my alignments with energy swirl inside me, shifting and powerful. I am shaking. Raffaele feels the rising power in me, because a note of fear hovers over him. Still, he doesn't move. He faces me with grim determination, refusing to back down. Don't. Concentrate. Control it. The only way to clamp down on my energy is to erase my emotions, and so I fold them each away, one by one. My sorrow turns to anger, then to ice-cold fury. My soul curls in on itself in defense. I am gone. I am truly gone. I am not sorry. You have no right to judge me, I whisper, looking around at the others. You belong to a society that thrives on murder. You're no better. Raffaele only returns my look with his level gaze. He nods at the others to leave. Lucent starts to protest, then sighs and casts me one last glare before following Gemma and Mikkel out the door. Raffaele and I are the only ones left in the room. For a moment, however brief, the gentleness on his face fades away to reveal something hard and dark. Murder is a means to an end, he finally says, tilting his head slightly at me. This time, the gesture looks more cunning than flirtatious. not an activity of pleasure. If you cast me out of the Dagger Society, then I will form my own. I am tired of losing. I am tired of being used, hurt, and tossed aside. It is my turn to use. My turn to hurt. My turn. You're making a mistake, I say. My voice emerges flat and cold, the voice of someone new. By not killing me now. No, Raffaele replies. I'm not. He finally stands. His hand separates from mine. He walks toward the door with his signature grace, then stops right before it. Adelina, he says, turning. The look in his eyes threatens to break me. I loved him too. Then he leaves me, and I am truly alone. I pledge myself to the Rose Society until the end of my days. To use my eyes to see all that happens, my tongue to woo others to our side, my ears to hear every secret, my hands to crush my enemies. I will do everything in my power to destroy all who stand in my way. The Rose Society Official Initiation Pledge by Adelina Amuteru. Adelina Amuteru. Night has fallen and it is quiet again. Out in the estate gardens, a few candles flicker in mourning for Enzo. I don't know where the other daggers are. Perhaps they've long ago left this place. Perhaps they've fled to the Skylands, where Beldane might give them shelter. Tomorrow morning, things will be different. The uprising has been crushed. Giulietta will rule as Queen of Kenetra, and Terran will bring his wrath down on all Malfettos. Enzo's supporters have gone into hiding to lick their wounds. Violetta and I will flee Estensia. Where we'll go, I'm not sure. I'll settle in another port capital, perhaps, one far from here. Maybe I'll start my own society to strike back against Terran. Maybe we'll run across other young elites. The daggers can't be the only ones. I sit before the mirror of my vanity in my chamber, leaning weakly against my chair. My chest wound hurts every time I breathe. The knife tucked into my boot is my only remaining weapon, and now I take it out and set it on the vanity's surface, its point facing me. Through the window, I can see the dark blue silhouettes of the estate gardens. Enzo walks down there, gliding through the grass surrounding the main fountains. His sapphire robes trail behind him. I know he's not real, that it's only another vision that I cannot control. Everyone will talk about me. Word of the prince's death is going to spread through the country like wildfire. Lucent has already sent doves to deliver the news to other dagger patrons. People will say that the prince had fallen for me and that I killed him in order to help Terran gain the throne. They will accuse me of tricking Enzo into loving me and then trying to seize his position of power. I will be whispered about. I will have enemies lurking in every shadow. Let them talk. Let their fear of me grow. I welcome it. I stare silently at my reflection in the mirror, studying my long silver locks, the broken side of my face, all of it illuminated by the blue-white hue of moonlight. I think back to the night when I screamed at my reflection and shattered my mirror with my brush. Has anything changed since then? My father's ghost blurs in and out of the mirror's reflection, gliding behind me, his face a dark, menacing portrait. I try in vain to make him go away, but I can't. My powers overwhelm me, creating visions of things I don't want to see. I suddenly seize the knife on my table, then I grab a lock of my hair and frantically begin to cut it off. Strands glitter across my vision. For a moment, I can't tell if they are strands of energy or strands of my hair, and then fall shining to the floor. A strange fever seizes me. My wound twists in protest under my bandages, tearing open again, but I don't care. I hate everything about my markings. I want them gone. They have brought upon me all of the pain and suffering in my life. They have taken from me everything that matters. In this instant, none of my powers give me joy. I am still alone, broken and small, the butterfly fighting for life in the grass. Maybe it will be for the best if Terran wins. Let him destroy us all. Let our markings die out from this world and end our fight. I have to get rid of this marking. Again and again I slice away, chopping off locks of my hair and spilling the broken strands all around me. In my frenzy, the blade nips at my fingers and my scalp, leaving cuts as it goes. I sway in my chair, then fall to the floor. Red blurs across my vision, mixing with the gray. Adelina! Somewhere in the midst of my frenzy is a small, clear voice. Then Violetta is here in my room, her smooth hands reaching for mine, her pleas falling on deaf ears. I jerk away from her grasp, jump to my feet, and continue to slash away at my hair. Let go of me, I hiss, tasting salt and water on my lips. Someone seizes the blade from my hands, leaving me helpless. In blind fury, I lash out at my sister with my illusions, trying to force her to return the knife to me. But Violetta wrenches my power away. The sudden rush of energy leaving my body robs me of my breath. I gasp, then brace myself against my table as my knees crumple. Violetta's arms are around me. She's lowering me carefully to the floor. All around us are locks of my hair, painted silver and gray by the moons. Violetta pulls me into a tight embrace. I cling desperately to her, terrified. I can feel myself losing, I whisper, my voice cut by broken sobs. The darkness seeps in a little more every day. What have I done? How can I be like this? I can make it stop. I can eventually learn to take it away from you forever. Her soft words cut through the angry voices poisoning my mind. She hesitates. I can save you. Taryn's exact words come out of my sister's mouth. I flinch away. No! I snap. Give it back! Violetta's eyes glow with tears. It will destroy you. Let it. I don't care. Give my power back, I beg you. I can't live without it. Violetta studies my face. It is not often that I see our resemblance, but here in this pale moonlight, her eyes become mine, my hair becomes hers, and the sadness on her face breaks my heart as surely as mine must break hers. Finally, Violetta lets go. My energy comes rushing back to me, giving me life and freedom. I seize the threads and hold them close. This is all I have that is mine. Just leave me alone, I mutter over and over again. Just leave me alone. My words cut off when Violetta wraps her arms around me again. Mia Delinetta, she whispers in my ear. Do you remember how we used to lie in the long grass, counting the stars as they emerged in the evening sky? I nod against her shoulder. Do you remember how we used to dance in Mother's old bedchamber? Do you remember how we used to hide in the closet and pretend we lived far, far away? Her voice starts to tremble. Do you remember how I sat up with you late into the night, binding your broken finger as best as I could? Do you remember? I nod, biting back my tears. Yes! You are not alone. She tightens her embrace. All my life I've tried to protect you. And then I realized that's all I ever wanted. Kindness with no strings attached had only ever come from Violetta. I do not know why I never saw it. In all this world, only she has done things for me, bad or good, with no thought of her own gain. We are sisters. Despite all we've been through, all that we have held against each other, we are sisters until death comes for us. Something breaks inside me, dissipating the ugly whispers that plagued me moments earlier, and the gates holding back my tears break down. I hug Violetta fiercely as if I might die were I to let go. Grief envelops me. I begin to weave. I form an illusion all around us, a vision of things that I dream of and things that don't exist. The room shimmers and then disappears, replaced instead with the sun-drenched gardens of our old family home. My hair and lashes are no longer silver, but dark like my sister's and mother's, and my face is unbroken and perfect. Violeta giggles at me and tugs a flower behind my ear. Our father comes to greet us from inside the house. He is a whole and healthy vision, a fantasy of someone I never knew, with laughter in his voice. The scent of wind and wood on his coat instead of the familiar perfume of wine. Beside him is our mother, an amused smile on her lips, a vision of the women we will grow into. I run into their arms. My mother puts her hands on my cheeks and kisses me. My father hugs me and lifts me high in the air. He spins me around in a wide circle. I throw my head back and laugh with him, because I am his daughter and he is my father and he is not ashamed of me. He loves me wholly, the way it should have been. I hold the vision for as long as I can. I would have held it forever, happy to lose myself in it for the rest of my life. Finally, I release the illusion. It slowly fades away around us. The sun and grass replaced with moonlight and wooden floors. My mother and father replaced with Violeta, her arms still wrapped tightly around me, her skin warm. I lean against her, weak and exhausted, bleeding, my energy spent. Neither of us speaks. Tomorrow morning, I will lead us out of Estancia. I will find others like ourselves. I will turn us against Taren with such fury that he will beg for forgiveness. Tomorrow, I will take on all of these things. I will be unstoppable. But tonight, we stay where we are, holding on, lost in the dark. Epilogue. City of Haddonberry, Northern Beldane, the Skylands. Maeve Jacqueline Kelly Corrigan. Far north of the island nation of Kenetra, on the high Skyland plains of the nation of Beldane, Crown Princess Maeve dips her hands in holy water in preparation for a prisoner's execution. She squints up at the clouds covering the sky, then out at the long length of bridge that leads from her and the Haddonberry Palace gates out into the city. The winds are strong for a summer day. They whistle against the gates behind her, singing some haunted tune, and the smattering of people who have gathered for the executions huddle closer together on either side of the gates, braving the cold and peering curiously over the heads of soldiers. Maeve gathers her furs higher around her neck, bracing herself against the winds in front of the gates, and then turns her attention to the chained man groveling at her feet. Tiny ornaments dangling in her hair clink together in the wind. Third prisoner today. She sighs. If I'm going to spend a day killing people, I should at least be on the battlefield. Shooting arrows into weak, staggering prisoners is no fun at all. Behind her, in a perfect line, stand her six older brothers. At her side, her white Beldish tiger sits languidly, staring at the prisoner with lazy golden eyes, her fur long and thick and slashed with gold stripes. They match the fierce lines of the gold painted across Maeve's own face. Amazing, really, how much a skinny adolescent tiger taken from the forests of the northern Skylands can grow in a year. She leans a hand against the hilt of her sword. "Do you have a confession?" she says to the prisoner. Her voice rings out low, harsh and grating, just like her mother's, loud enough for the audience to hear. "Speak so that I may decide whether you are deserving of a swift death." Maeve can barely understand the prisoner's reply through his sobs. He crawls as close to her as he can until the guards flanking him shove him back. He manages to brush dirty fingers against the edges of her boots. "Your Highness," he manages to say through his shaking voice. He turns his head up to her, eyes wet and pleading, and wipes at the lines of dirt and blood painting his face. Maeve wrinkles her nose in disgust. Hard to believe this man was once nobility. I have my confession. I have shamed this land which Holy Fortuna has blessed. I do not deserve to live. Your Royal Highness, I am your humble.
Your confession, Sir Briard. She interrupts, her tone bored. She wears her braids high in warrior fashion today, fierce ropes of entwined locks that run along either side of her head, pushing her hair up like the hackles on a wolf's back. Half of her hair is dark blonde, the other half is midnight black. The great goddess Fortuna, keeper of Beldane, had blessed her with this marking, among other things. The prisoner's sobbing continues. He confesses through trembling lips something about adultery and affairs, rage and murder, how he had killed his fleeing wife with a dagger in her back, how he kept stabbing her even after she was dead. The audience murmurs in low voices as he speaks. When he finishes, Maeve's eyes sweep the scene, pondering the appropriate punishment. After a moment, she looks back down at the prisoner. Sir Briard, she says. She pulls the heavy crossbow from her back. I will make you a deal. The man glances up at her, a sudden rush of hope lighting his eyes.
A deal?
Yes. Look behind you. Do you see this long bridge that we stand on? How it leads beyond the palace grounds and into the city? Maeve nods off into the distance as she starts to notch an arrow to her crossbow. Make it to the end of the bridge before I count to 10, and I will strip you of your title and let you live in exile. The prisoner gasps. Then he crawls to Maeve again and starts to kiss her boots.
I will, he says in a rush. I will. Thank you, princess. Thank you, your highness.
Well, Maeve says as the man's guards haul him up onto his feet. She tightens her grip on the crossbow. The guards step aside, leaving the man to sway on his own. You had better get going. She hefts the crossbow to her shoulder and begins to count. 1, 2. The prisoner panics. He whirls around, picks up his chains, and starts to run as quickly as he can. He stumbles over his chains in his haste, but manages to catch himself in time. The crowd starts to chant, then shout. Maeve squints down the line of her crossbow. She continues to count. 7, 8, 9. The prisoner is too slow. Maeve lets her arrow fly. Equal crime, her mother always said. Equal punishment. It hits him squarely in his calf. He screams, then collapses in a heap. Frantically, he pushes himself back onto his feet, then staggers onward. Maeve calmly notches another arrow, then lifts it and shoots it again. This time, she aims for his other leg. It strikes true. The man falls hard. His sobbing pierces the air. The crowds cheer. The prisoner is a few yards from the last post. He starts to drag himself on his elbows. Prisoners are always so damn desperate when they stare death in the face. Maeve watches him crawl for a moment. Then she kneels down to her tiger. Go, she commands. The tiger pounces from her side. Moments later, the prisoner's wails change into high-pitched screams. Maeve looks on as the audience cheers. The sight brings her no joy. She holds up her hands for silence, and the shouts cut off sharply. This is no occasion for applause, she calls out in disapproval. The queen does not tolerate cold-blooded murder in the great nation of Beldane. Let this be a lesson to you all. One of her brothers straightens from his casual stance and taps her on the shoulder, Augustine. He hands her a parchment. News from Estencia, little Jack, he says over the noise. The dove arrived this morning. The nickname lifts Maeve's heart for an instant. It always reminded her of her childhood with her band of brothers, trailing after them in her furs and dresses, mimicking their swagger and hunting stances. Then her heart tenses. Lately, Augustine has only called her little Jack when troubling news has arrived, like when their mother first fell ill. Maeve reads the letter in silence. It's from Lucent, an address not to the palace but directly to Maeve herself. She stays quiet for a long moment, and she sighs in frustration. Kenetra has a new ruler, it seems, she finally replies. She clicks her tongue in disapproval, then whistles for her tiger to return. Her brother leans closer. What happened? The king was assassinated, Maeve replies. Not by the crown prince, but by Kenetra's lead inquisitor, and the prince is dead. Augustine leans back and rests his hand on his sword's hilt. That changes our plans, doesn't it? Maeve nods without answering, her lips tight. She had hoped that being one of the dagger's biggest patrons would mean that after Enzo took the throne, he would carry out his promise of reigniting trade between Kenetra and Beldane. If I'm to gradually win control of Kenetra, I'd rather do it without sacrificing thousands of soldiers. Besides, she preferred to see someone who supported Malfetto's on the island nation's throne. But now the crown prince is dead. It's a complication, she finally says. Still, perhaps it will be easier this way. And what's this mention of a white wolf? Some new elite, Maeve mutters, distracted as she rereads the letter. Killing off Fortuna's chosen ones? Those Kenetrans got more barbaric every year. She turns around and hands the parchment back to her brother. Give this to the queen. Of course. And gather the others, she adds. Time to call her elites into action. If we still want to make a move, we'll need to do it soon. Augustine folds his arms across his chest and smiles. With pleasure, Your Highness. Maeve watches him go. Lucent. She misses Lucent desperately. Their intimate conversations and their friendly duels and their wild forest adventures. Lucent would track the deer. Maeve would deliver the killing shots. Lucent would scowl. Maeve would tease. Lucent would kneel to pledge her loyalty to the crown. Maeve would help her to her feet. Lucent would shy away from her kisses. Maeve would pull her back. Lucent fled to Kenetra after the queen banished her. Maeve grew quiet and cold in her absence. As the guards clean up after the execution, Maeve heads back into the Haddonbury Palace. Her brothers continue to their mother's bedchamber, their voices excited as they talk about the news. But Maeve takes a different route that steers her away from the palace's apartments, out across the courtyards, and toward a small, separate manor. Her mother married two husbands and birthed 7 sons before finally getting a daughter. Maeve has waited her whole life to step into her birthright, but becoming the Queen of Beldane means that her mother will first have to pass away. She winces at the thought. Still, she chooses to avoid visiting the dying queen with her brothers. Maeve was not in the mood for another lecture on choosing a husband so she could start birthing an heir. 2 soldiers standing guard at the manor house bow low to her. They escort her up the familiar halls until they finally reach a quiet floor. Here, Maeve takes the lead while the nervous guard stays several feet behind her. She approaches a narrow door with iron bars stretching across its wood, then pulls out a key strung around her neck. On the other side of the door, she hears someone stir. The keepers back away. Even her pet tiger refuses to get closer. The lock clicks open. Maeve pushes aside the iron gratings and swings the door open with a faint screech. She enters alone, closing the door securely behind her. The room is dark. Shafts of blue light beam in from between the window's iron gratings. In the chamber's bed, a figure stirs at her entrance and sits upright. He looks tall and thin, his hair rumpled. Her youngest brother. It's me, Maeve calls out gently. The young man in bed squints sleepily at her. In the light, his eyes shine like 2 glowing discs, the color not quite of this world. He doesn't reply. Maeve stops a few feet before the end of the bed. They stare at each other. She knows that if she opened his chamber door and gave a command, his eyes would turn black and he could very well kill everyone in the palace yard. But she doesn't,
and so he remains quiet. "Sleep well, Tristan," she says.
"Well enough,"
the young man finally replies. "Do you know what I heard today?"